Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com.
Welcome, everyone. My guest today is lead analyst Logan Motoshami to talk about the inflation data and what it means for the overall economy and for housing. As always, I want to thank our podcast sponsor, Vesta, for making this episode possible. Logan, welcome back to the podcast.
It is wonderful to be here. Such a busy week we had with the conference and all the crazy, confusing economic data. I think this was one of those weeks where a lot of people were confused with the data that came in and some of the reaction.
Yeah, it absolutely was. So, I update the Mortgage Rate Center every day with your comments. If our listeners don't know, the Mortgage Rate Center page, we have rates powered by Pollen. We also have your analysis. We have any news that happens about mortgage rates. And it's just this whole week has been confounding, but especially the last 3 days, because on the one hand, you have inflation data that I think will do something to mortgage rates, and then the opposite happens. So let's dig in there. What have we seen for the inflation, and what has happened as a result?
So the 12-month PCE inflation data still has a two handle, just like the 12 months PPI inflation has a two handle. But again, remember, paper, rock, scissors, labor over inflation always. So the shorter duration, the three month has picked up. And if this stays, this means that these levels are going to be sticky. So you have progress on the year-over-year data, but going out to get to the 2%, you're going to need more economic weakness. And again, for me, it's always about the labor market for me and jobless claims. The jobless claims, again, went down, and the labor market is outperforming. And when I say outperforming my models and how I talk about the labor markets, and I'm very, very particular with my numbers, especially post-COVID, to the exact number. So I think, it's Friday morning, and then the headline PCE data beat. So the inflation number was hot. The economic data was really good. I mean, in fact, the Atlanta Fed has like 3.9% GDP going into the second quarter. All those things combined, I think a lot of people were like, the 10-year yield can shoot up, and the bond yields fell. And the only comment I could give on that is that the month-to-month data came in line with core PCE's kind of 0.3%. A lot of people were thinking that could be 0.5. So when that headline came, bond yields fell. And the market is has it's kind of somewhat oversold to a degree. So that, I think, it confused a lot of people, but that's the explanation I could give right now. And the 10-year yield is up so much, after we broke that key technical level. There's been a lot of selling in there anyway. But this goes into the question of, what is this? What is all this? Is this a soft landing, hard landing, no landing? I hate that, by the way. I hate the whole landing things. But, in terms of that, we rather focus on the data. But that's the topic now. Like, what's going on now with the economic cycle?
Okay, well, let's talk about it. Is this a hard landing, a soft landing, or no landing?
Okay, so a no landing would be that the economy is growing, but the inflation data is not going to where the Fed wants it. Okay, so technically, in theory, that would be a no landing. A soft landing, which is interesting to me, it would be that the Fed would pivot before the labor market breaks. So technically, I can't really. That's not my work. So I don't believe in that concept. The hard landing is that the unemployment rate, and we go into a recession. And what traditionally happens is, when the Fed cuts rates, not all the time, but majority of the time, it's not for a good reason, right? So when you stay higher for longer, the probability of a hard landing ticks up. But for now, jobless claims still low. Residential workers haven't lost their jobs yet. GDP and consumption levels are good, right? They're keeping the economy going. So in that context, you're technically still in the no landing phase. And I just look at it different. Like to me, it's like, if you wanted to put a number on the hard landing, the unemployment rate gets above 4.5%, which, by the way, was the Fed's forecast in 2023, because they forecasted a recession and it didn't happen. But in this case, I think we just have to do the nitty gritty work and focus all the time. And, you know, we're actually going to Nashville, Tennessee, next week, or by the time it's podcast, and we're giving an economics presentation, not a housing presentation, which, oh my God, I love. I'm just like, that's going to be a lot of fun.
So, you know, let's talk about recession for a minute. You started raising recession red flags in 2022. You put, you know, housing in a recession, I believe, that year, correct?
June 5th, 2022, 5:01 p.m. Two-thirds of the housing market is technically still in a recession. The one-third isn't. The one-third is the single-family permits. So in regards to that, this is why everyone has to have, like, what I call a labor trigger. Like, if I was talking to a young analyst, you make sure you have your labor trigger, because once you use the R word, once you go into the recession and you don't have it, you can't do what a lot of baby boomers do online. They keep on actually doubling and triple down on the recession calls. That makes it look bad. So in this context, all six recession red flags were up in 2022 after November 9th. You know, the fifth one was brought down. That is a big one, because that's housing, and rates impact the housing sector disproportionately, and residential construction workers lose their jobs, and that's the front line of unemployment claims rising. That didn't happen, and a lot of things were happening in 2022. The dollar was strong, Russia, you know, was Europe gonna freeze to death, and all these things, and then the banking crisis happened. So I understand the energy and the vibe. I hate vibes. I love how Mike Simonson has brought that up. Less, more data, less vibes. Vibes, really? Come on. In any case, the whole Gandalf line was created, you know, I was like, I really don't think mortgage rates should go below this level unless the labor market is breaking, and it's not breaking. So we're not there yet. And jobless claims, right? Jobless claims, to me, is the key data line, has been the key data line. And if everyone just followed that data line at this point in 2022, 2023, and 2024, the R word, recession, would be not discussed as much.
So if you're in housing, okay, so, you know, there's one reality for people who are maybe in different sectors, and then another reality for people who are in housing. So whether that's real estate or mortgage, appraisal, title, the whole housing ecosystem, as you said, most of it has been in a recession now for coming up on 2 years. When we think about a hard landing or soft landing, if you're in housing, what does that mean?
Technically, a hard landing is good for housing. Why? Okay, so disproportionately, right? Because home sales are so low and mortgage rates have been elevated for a long time, the one thing that gets disproportionately, you know, benefited from lower rates, shocking enough, is the housing sector. Rates have been higher for such a long period and sales have been so low that it doesn't really take much to move the needle. That's the thing. And you don't need 3 or 4% mortgage rates to have these sales gain sticks. You just kind of need that 6% level. I cannot technically get the 10-year yield and mortgage rates below 5.75% on mortgage rates, or the 10-year yield below 3.37, I mean, really 3.0, unless the economic data starts to get noticed for the week. It hasn't. So in a harder landing, housing gets disproportionately hit benefit as it's got, or it gets the benefit from that as it's been disproportionately crushed in a good economy. And it's interesting. One of the first articles I wrote for Housing Wire was this, remember the trade war tap dance back in the previous decade? You know, we'd have people come out there, oh yeah, trade war this, trade war that, you know, Keystone Cops and all that stuff. We had some real fun with that one. And then they were signing deals to make that kind of go away. And I wrote about this, that, you know, hey, listen, if the 10-year yield gets about 1.94%, which is, for anybody who doesn't follow me, in the previous, that was like a really big level for me in the past decade, is that if that gets above there, housing will probably get hit because rates have been lower. In this context, we have an economy that's outperforming. Nominal wage growth has been very high, especially on the lower end, and it's disproportionately hit housing in a negative factor. So it's weird, but if you actually look at it just in that context, just by the rate variable, this is it. And again, I think a lot of people look at housing in a different way. Like some people say, housing isn't in a recession until home prices fall, right? So a lot of people, by the way, for everyone, my trolling crash friends, this is why you do not do peak to trough forecasts until you have a one down year. You've been technically disavowed from talking about housing because you thought 2022 was the natural 5 to 10 year decline in home prices before we ever recover. It never happened, so you can no longer talk. So home prices are not housing economics. Housing economics is construction workers, big ticket items. There's a transfer of commissions between agents, loan officers, escrow. These things, housing is in a recession, 2/3. Single family permits are holding up. That's the 1/3 that isn't in a recession. That's the big one. So in this context, you know, housing has been in a recession literally for almost going 2 years, but the economy is still moving. So I think that's where we go. And the baseline of it is that the underneath core of housing in terms of homeowners, right? If you're not buying a house or selling your house to buy another house, what are you doing? You're like, chill, life is good, right? You have a very low housing cost. So whatever inflation that comes into your world, whether it's car insurance, home insurance, or anything, you're somewhat shielded and you just do your basically normal consumption levels here. So I think there's where we start to get in confusing discussions about housing and economic cycles or anything in that matter. But again, jobless claims, construction workers, those that hasn't broken yet. Once it does, you start to go in another direction.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Let's talk about pending home sales. So we got that report, was it yesterday?
We got it Wednesday. Here's something interesting. That really shocked a lot of people. Like, pending home sales beat on the month-to-month, and it was positive year-over-year, just a tiny sliver. Like, you really would call it flat, but you know, for headline purposes, people said it was positive year over year. Okay, so let's go back to the talking points. The bar is so low for all of us. We can all trip over it. Everyone, right? So when you see these year over year positive numbers or these month to month beats, just remember we are working from record low levels of sales. You know, our pending contracts that we have with Altos that Mike shows on a weekly basis, they're still showing positive year, and they're just very low, right? And now mortgage rates have made another leg higher. But when you work from very low levels, just take any positive data in context to where we're working from. And I know it shocked some people. We had a positive month to month. We beat estimates, and then we were up year over year. Just remember, we have over 158 million people. We have 342 million Americans living in this country. These home sales are really, really low. So take it in context. Whenever you see really growth in housing, purchase application data actually grows positive. So we're not there. We're just bouncing off the bottoms and we're just hovering around these low levels really since 2022.
So interesting. So we had, we closed out the gathering event with a really fun panel with you, Mike Simonson, Odetta Cushy, who's deputy chief economist at First American. I moderated this panel. It was so much fun to have the three of you on there. Really different views. Not that you guys disagreed a lot, but just had very different perspectives coming from what you were looking at. And one of the things I asked you was about the election effects, right? Like, is there an election year effect on housing? And I thought it was a really great discussion. And then today, Wall Street Journal put out something about how Trump allies say that, you know, he has plans to, if he wins, to blunt the Fed's independence. So would love to talk to you about that.
You know, it's funny, like a few months ago, I said, you know, if President Trump becomes president again, you know, he's going to ask for lower rates. But I'm going to take a different angle on this because a lot of people just, you know, they think of Trump, they think of real estate, and you know, he wanted lower interest rates back in the previous decade. Trump, to me, wants to devalue the dollar, right? The dollar is too strong. And the reason he wants to devalue the dollar is that he wants the U.S. to be exporting more goods. So we import a lot of stuff because we consume. We're the consumption kings of the world, right? So, you know, like Japan's currency, the yen, is getting really weak against the dollar. You know, they can export stuff cheaper to the world, and us U.S., you know, consuming goods. So I actually am going to take a different approach. I think Trump wants lower rates more. I mean, of course, he'll talk about it. I'm pretty sure Trump's going to go, listen, I'll get mortgage rates lower and people will buy homes again, you know. But I really do think he wants to devalue the dollar and make things, get the exports in this country going. And it's just, you know, we're the consumption kings of the world, and we have king dollar. So I think Trump trying to go into the Fed is more about that than trying to, you know, prop up real estate. Or, you know, of course, there's a lot of people in New York with a lot of loan debt that's going to be maturing soon. So they probably would like to see interest rates go lower. But I would take the dollar side of the equation into it, because I think that's going to be a staple of his campaign, is to grow exports, do tariffs, and try to find a way to devalue the dollar so it makes sense for us to grow our exports.
So the journal article really looks at, like, what could he do in this? Because he has complained. Of course, he's the one that put named Powell the Fed chair, and then he complained about it, of course. but one of the things that, you know, the article mentions is that it's very unclear and probably not legal for him to fire a Fed chair, but he probably would, or the president, whoever the president is, probably would have the ability to demote that person just onto the board and then raise someone else up. So there's some things there. He also got to, you know, name several people. I think it's four people to the board of governors when he was president. So anyway, it was just really interesting article. We have a write up on it as well, just to think about, does any president have a lot of control of the Fed?
Not in the legal sense of, like, fire him right on the spot, like in the show Apprentice or anything, but If I had to like maybe bet something on this, Powell resigns and Trump actually brings up Judy Shelton again, who they tried to get in the Fed before onto the board. Judy Shelton is a gold bug, so that might seem kind of weird in this situation, but recently she talked about the Fed overhiked and that it's impacting an investment, and they're too restrictive right now. So it wouldn't shock me, hypothetical, President Trump wins, and then Powell eventually resigns, and Judy Shelton gets put on, and she's already laying the groundwork for rate cuts in this. So if I had to bet something, which I try to avoid politics at all costs, but in this context, that's what I would go. And then in this case, we try to find a way to lower rates, to value the dollar, something to that nature. That would be the bet. But you can't necessarily fire the Fed. This isn't Turkey where you could just pull the guy out and just, you know, put it in. So there's a lot of checks and balances in place to keep the Fed kind of away from the political powers.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Which, you know, we've talked about, like, it's good and bad, right? It's you know, they need to be independent, to have an independent central bank. At the same time, they're kind of accountable to, you know, who, because it's a lifelong position.
It's one of those things that Sarah, what is politics?
I know.
What is, but politics is the word itself. It's right in front of us.
I don't think that. You think that.
Many blood-sucking parasites. So it's probably a good thing that that part of our society and the Fed aren't, like, you know, mingling too much. So, you know, again, a lot of the things that are happening now are COVID-related. And over time, some of those things change. But we've also talked about how the world is a little bit different now that you have Russia invading Ukraine, you have China on the point of invading Taiwan, you have all the drama that the Iranians cause in the Middle East. And do these things just stay around here for a while because, you know, it's the dollar's too strong. We have a lot of geopolitical tension out there. So we're not living in a world right now where we are used to, where we have very, very low growth rates of inflation out there. And trying to get back to those, to that area too fast becomes technically a hard landing in that regard. So, you know, politics, it is what it is. What, whoever the next president is, I don't think Powell, as soon as Powell's term is up, I think he's done. Anyway, so eventually in the future, we have to see. But if he wants to, if anybody wants to, like, tell Neil Kashkari to go, like, we're like fine with that. Because the interest rate sectors of the economy under Neil's vision is actually doing good or holding up better. Again, housing is 2/3 of it's in a recession. I've never actually taken the existing home sales off of the recession line. You would actually need to see growth, and I have little target numbers to hit before we get that out of there. We're not anywhere close to there yet. You would need like mortgage rates to get down to 6% to even get a few prints like above 4.72 million or something like that. We're just not in that kind of environment.
We have a long way to go in housing. I thought another really great point that you guys made when we talked about demographics and the demographic shifts, which demographics have been so key to this, your work, your models, everything you talk about. And I liked something Odetta said, which she said, you know, everyone talks about a tsunami, but she said in economics, you know, when it comes to demographics, it's glacial. There is no such thing as a tsunami in demographics just by its very nature. And I thought that was so interesting because there are so many things. And in the same way, when you're talking about Fed policy or whatever, some things economically, they just don't, there's no quick fix.
The silver tsunami has been trash for a very long time. So Odetta has very kind words to say about a glacier, but that's just not how demographics work.
Right. You agree with Odetta. You agree.
I mean the Black Plague back in Europe, you know, that created a death wave. That was a tsunami of death, right? The velocity of death in plagues. But so what did I say when Odetta answered that question? I said, yeah, there is no Logan's Run here at age 65, right? For all you young kids who don't know what I'm talking about, it's nothing to do with me. Just go look up Logan's Run. It's an old movie.
It's a very great old movie. That's probably, if I watched it today, I would be like, this is the cheesiest thing.
No, it was hilarious in that movie because there's the old person that all the young people start touching. I was like, oh my God, it's a baby boomer who's hoarding like 50 homes, you know? And all these young people said, give me the homes, you know, but I'm just joking. But in any case, Logan's Run, the movie, everyone died at 33 or some young age. The book, I think, was 20. But a tsunami just doesn't have that kind of velocity, and I think, to me, again, it's been an unbelievable marketing grift for so long. It wasn't just housing; it was like every baby boomer was going to sell their stocks around this time, and the stock market is dead because nobody can live on. You know, God, there's so much trash out there that you just got to like do what you got to do to try to make sense to people. But she did eloquently explain it by, you know, it's a glacier, not a tsunami.
I also thought, you know, I just read something, I think it was The Economist, who talked about, you know, people living to 120 is now in sight, right? I mean, I remember when I was young, Logan, you always tell me how old I am. Okay, so a long time ago, on Good Morning America, if you got to be 100 years old, they featured you on Good Morning America. They would send a camera and they'd be like, oh, let's all wish this person 100, because that's how rare it was that someone made it to 100. Now, I think the oldest person was like 112 or something. We've had 114. Like, people living to 100 isn't like the, I mean, we're all like, oh, that's great, but it's not like this shocking thing. And you think about, you know, our generation, the next generation after that. And so that really throws housing into, you know, retirement, but the whole idea of aging in place and what happens even to employment and housing, it really throws a wrench into that.
Yes, I think to me it's, you know, if you really wanted to do a kind of a death economic theory in housing, you really have to go into the areas where heart disease is actually very prevalent in older Americans, and then you do the kind of, it's grim to say this, the death heat maps with housing with older people in that regard. So, you know, modern technology, I mean, as the generations go by, as long as you stay healthy, right, you can live longer, right? I mean, I'm going to be 49 this year. I feel better than I did in my 20s. And I was very active then. Now, so humans can live longer because of the unbelievable technology and the ability to actually enhance our lifestyles. And it's not like you're like crippled and can't do anything and stuff like that. You can, I mean, we see unbelievable fit people in the 60s and 70s now that you wouldn't even imagine to be the case. So yeah, I mean, it's people live longer. In some cases, it's not the most efficient thing, because some people have very terrible health that can't be fixed anytime soon. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why the median tenure is older now. People, boomers, are living in their homes longer and longer, and they're also living longer. So the productivity, because you physically can do more stuff or mentally could do more stuff. And, you know, the internet has allowed people to work from home, right? You know, if you're 70 years old, you can work from home and still be productive. And so all this goes into play. And again, economics is never static. Things change. I mean, COVID, look what happened. None of us were like planning on a COVID-19 recovery model being written on April 7th, 2020 and thinking about how we're going to model this out. So, but long-term shifts, you know, we have the ability to live longer and actually perform better. I mean, look at all these pickleball players. A lot of these pickleball players are boomers, right? So
they have the time to go out on the courts and wipe the floor with us.
I still think pickleball is a bubble.
I like pickleball. And we had a great pickleball tournament.
We always have pickleball. You know, you could actually, if you really wanted to fill up some of the office space, you could make the office spaces into pickleball areas. You know, like, you know, they used to do that with gaming, you know, where they have these buildings and they have these gaming centers. You could just have pickleball centers in this area. And then like have like baby boomer, like matching.com places and make it a boomerville, you know, for pickleball and dating and all that stuff. The possibilities are endless, and they could all watch Logan's Run and see that one person in the day.
Listen, my local mall is famous for just like it hasn't done well. And so it had those kind of gaming things. At one point it had Joe Exotic brought his big cats into my local mall, and it was like an attraction. Not even kidding. I have a video evidence. But anyway, all that is to say, there's all sorts of things that might happen. Pickleball might be the next thing. So
we'll take our pickleball tour to Nashville, Tennessee. How about that? There we go.
All right, Logan, thanks for being on. Thanks for explaining this sort of confusing week we had with inflation data and then what mortgage rates did. And we will talk to you again soon.
And also one last thing, you know, I know a lot of questions about inventory growth because I finally hit my target, you know, and inventory growth should pick up now and we should start to see it maybe accelerate. I know a lot of people asking about Florida and Texas. When we look at our data, 40% of the inventory growth in America comes from Florida and Texas. But also think about those are two very big states. So that number isn't too crazy when you look at it at the population of Texas and in Florida anyway. But we've discussed the situations with Florida, especially the condos, very extensively over the last few podcasts. But I know that was a question that was asked, and there was a answer for the gentleman that asked me that.
We do. And we have some more reporting on that, some more stories coming out about that as well from some of our newsrooms. So stay tuned. Look for it. Look for the tracker that should be out by this by the time that this drops.
All right. You got your cowboy stuff ready? You got your boots and cowboy hats going to Nashville?
Absolutely. Yes. I'm ready to go to the Grand Ole Opry. We're really excited.
Oh, my God. Me on that stage. Woo! I'll have to bring out the guitar.
Do you even know any country songs, Logan Motorswami?
Absolutely. I'm gonna start singing, and we're going to get dancing going out there. You know, it's Nashville. Nashville's fun.
Nashville is fun. I'm looking forward to it. All right. Well, we'll see you then. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.